Hello, welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and the hospitality sector. We're back in London today at Canary Wharf, and I'm joined by two esteemed gentlemen from Merry Chef, which is part of Wellbuilt and Alley Group. This is actually our last episode this year, and it's our Christmas special. So we're going to change the theme a little bit today. We're going to chat about Merry Chef, of course, and these two gentlemen's careers, but also a Christmas theme, maybe give you some hints and tips for the busy season coming up for those working in the sector. So I'm joined by Paul Patel, who is the product manager and operator solutions. I think that's correct. And then Mark Owen, who's one of the culinary development chefs for the business. We're going to be talking about all their products, particularly about Merry Chef Connex and accessories and high-speed cooking. So Paul and Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Paul, do you want to kick us off? Just talk a little bit about like your career. What got you into food service equipment and what you do really?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a weird one. So I was formerly a chef, and okay. I used to work at Pennyhill Park down in Bagshot. And I'll try and keep this really short, as in the timeline. So I used to lodge with a gentleman whose best friend happened to be a gentleman called Simon Merrick. So I'm sure people industry will know Simon Merrick. So I knew him on and off. And then one day he came in and said, well, you know, you're a chef. We're recruiting for the international business. And I didn't even know what Merry Chef was at that time. And ironically, I said to him, well, what's in it for me? He goes, well, you don't work weekends, you get more money, and you can fly business class. So I was like, where do I sign? And 18 years later, I've gone through the business from development chef. I worked for a long time in sales, and then finally landed the current role was product manager.
Okay, fine.
So I've done quite a long evolution.
What is product manager? What do you do?
So there's different terminologies. I think people go, you're the the CEO of the product. Is the kind of classic kind of like textbook stuff. But essentially, I think you are the interface of the customer to the business. So we look at what are the customer needs and wants, not just individual, but from a global perspective. We need to understand, what are the pain points that customers are using using high-speed ovens or anything in food service? And then I have to package that up and deliver it to the business.
Okay.
To say, right, we see an opportunity here with it may be a product, it could be an accessory, it could be something. And we feed that back into the business, and I interlink with all elements of the business, from finance, engineering is very heavy, in that aspect.
Marketing, I guess.
Yeah, marketing to deliver products and solutions that customers want.
Cool. Okay. Well, welcome anyway. Thank you for giving up your day today or morning. Mark, talk about your sort of career, what brought you into our sector.
Indeed, Radford. I've been a professional chef for 35 years now, which I'm very proud of.
Well, you still old enough.
Exactly. Thank you. No, I feel old enough. But I'm very proud to have managed to sustain that long time in this career, because it is quite challenging, as we all know.
Yeah.
But for the last 20 years, I've been particularly in culinary development, value-added products out in the market, many of which we will all have eaten ourselves over time. So when an opportunity came up to join Wellbuilt and to work with the brands underneath that umbrella, it for me, it was so exciting. It was a no-brainer. I jumped on it as quick as I could. Why? I'm very passionate about the technology that sits behind a lot of our products, and I see the value in where they sit within the food service business. So
okay. It
was an easy transition for me. I'm loving every minute of it. I've been in the business only for 7 months.
Oh, wow, okay.
So. Yeah, so I'm relatively new, but it feels like a lot longer. It's a great team who we're working with, so very happy to be here. Thank you.
Great. Okay, well, welcome as well. So I mean, obviously this is the Christmas special. Christmas period, it's a peak period for our customers, food service, hospitality, whatever they're doing. Expectations rise, that the menus become maybe a bit more complex, footfall increases, and they're all stretched against staffing and resources and all of that. So I'd like to hear from you both, really. Why is Christmas such a critical period for the operators, and what pressures are they kind of facing behind the scenes?
Well, as you said, it's that moment of where everything just gets ramped up.
Yeah.
Your volumes increase, the menus change to deliver that, festive period, and, staffing get under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where that month is just ramped up completely. And so you see, you know, we do see a lot of customers, like, for example, you know, speed is key. Because if you're not delivering product fast, whether you're in a restaurant environment, food to go, it doesn't really matter. You know, you get the queues built up. And although we're British and we like to queue, there's a certain limit where people go, you know, I will go to the next best thing. So there's, you know, the sales revenue, you know, and operators this time period, this is their window to bank as much revenue as possible. Because then obviously we go into a low season. Typically, you know, when we're in catering, in chefing, you'd go Christmas is your peak, and then January, February is your trough, as it were, before it starts building up for Easter. So yeah. I think it's just a prime revenue window for operators at this time of year.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's essential for operators to get Christmas right. I think it leads on to securing further business. It's about building your reputation for going forward. And I think coming into the new year, that's when you're going to capture people's changing of their eating habits. And we are creatures of habit. So if you've got a great offer over Christmas and you've wowed someone, the likelihood is they're coming back next year. And it's key that you've got all the right equipment in place to sort of be able to cope with that. The staffing, obviously. So all of those issues sort of, are the challenges that these guys are going to face over the next week.
And in a way, it's consistency, isn't it? You've got to really deliver in this peak period when you're under a lot of pressure. Consistency is what's going to, as you said, tick that box for someone to go, that was really good.
Yeah.
Restaurant environment or chain operator out in the high street. If you can't deliver consistency, people are not going to feel festive.
Yeah,
you know, when they go out. So consistency is a big one, and that stems through a lot of stuff, I think. If you look at staffing, equipment, delivering what it's supposed to do,
is a
key important part.
Okay, so just looking at some of the sectors that you guys are dealing with as well, and sort of probably sectors that are putting the pressure. I mean, obviously, schools and that, they're closing, aren't they? So maybe not so much pressure there. But, you know, festive food markets, pubs, retail, grab-and-go, hotels, these kind of sectors, what challenges and what are you, your product, what's it doing to alleviate that for them, really?
Well, I think if you take food markets as a interesting point, because we've seen the rise of these kind of food halls in a lot of different areas. Mm-hmm. And typically, you know, you had the typical high street. That is now, obviously, there's been a lull where there's been, say, lack of investment through one thing or another, whether it may be higher rents, etc. But you've seen these spaces open up where they're trying to attract people back into towns because it's a focal point. It's like a dinner table. Everyone hangs around the kitchen, don't they? Everyone hangs around a dinner table because it's where food is. So we've seen those pop up. Now, typically, if you look at the pressures in there, you've got, you know, a lot of independent operators, mm-hmm. typically that run those kind of environments. You're going to get peaks and trough of demand coming in at different times. So again, they need to, again, deliver the consistent offer. They need to do it in a way that maximizes their revenue as well, you know, because they're independents. Okay. Every single penny counts.
Yeah.
When you're running like an independent store or you rented out a space, the cost is everything. So I think you're still going to have those challenges of staffing in there, pressure to deliver that product in a small space as well. Because they don't get big retail spaces, they'll get small little pods. Mm. So it's what can you put in there that's going to give them the maximum amount of operational efficiency to deliver a food offer.
Yeah.
What sort of foods are they putting through those?
Well, it varies, and that's the interesting thing now. We've not gone, you know, we may say like Pigs and Banquet and Brie are the classic favourites, but people get into food halls and you can, you know, the expanse of vegetarian and vegan food is still around. You know, even where I live in Chester, there's a whole raft of different choices.
Okay.
From pizza, fresh pasta, there's a place called Cheesy Bandits that just does everything cheese related in terms of mac and cheese, etc. So there's a right old spectrum out there. And where does Merry Chef fit? You know, it's helping with those peak demands to help as a throughput solution, but also, you know, in low periods as well. Mm-hmm. It just gives them a bit more flexibility in there. Again, being ventless as well, you know, most of those places will have some form of ventilation, but just gives that added piece of equipment that can go in and help, give them extra capacity. And easy to use. But also the challenges around that as well, although we've got different models that fit different categories of price points, mm-hmm. we know that, you know, independence, return on investment is huge. So not just in, you know, Mark can touch on some of the food offers he's maybe seen, but from a product perspective, we are looking at different ways of how do we reduce that cost barrier into those independence.
Independence.
To buy straight off our capital, that's a big chunk.
Yeah.
You know, and how do we look around things to make that entry into a high speed oven more affordable?
More easier. So, I mean, Mark, from your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that these kind of operators, it's all very well. They need the setup, they need the infrastructure, need to be organised, but also they need a quality food offer. And it's something that sets them apart from everybody else. Because look at us all, we all walk around, we eat with our eyes, don't we? And we see a queue, we see the smells, and automatically we're drawn. Yeah. So having the right offer in place that you can, you know, get through that queue and it's got to be something that's rapid. Then we draw back to the merry chef that is actually going to support you to get that queue down and to allow you to maximise your potential on that.
Sort of like cooked to order? Is that kind of how they're doing it? Or are they doing it all different combinations?
It varies very much. A lot of it really is, I say, smoke and mirrors, because it's all about how it's garnished and packaged. It's the complete finished product that we're sort of buying into. And that can be achieved in a number of different ways. But really, With the right preparation and the right mise en place, you take that product, you put it through the merry chef. You know, you're looking at probably a one minute to one and a half minute program, and you've got a ready product to go. So it just shows you, you know, the capabilities on sort of how you can really maximise and capitalise on this busy period. But
okay, and I mean, other sectors such as pubs and hotels, are they, you know, they're similar sort of pains and problems?
You'd definitely say that, you know, we looked about the overarching bit of, you know, the staffing consistency, you know, speed of cook. They will go across all sectors. Now, pubs are an interesting one because merry chefs typically, you would say, are probably not the main source of cooking within a pub.
Okay.
They're an ancillary equipment piece to help with the bottleneck.
Right, okay.
You know, so you'll have a charcoal grill or something, you'll have a combi steamer, whatever, fryers, you know, because you can't do raw battered fish and chips in a high-speed oven, but we'll maybe invent one at some point. but it's helping that peak of demand come in. Mm-hmm. You'll typically say that, you know, you take a chicken breast, you put it on the char grill, then you finish it in a merry chef. And point in question is, like, my old executive chef from Pennyhill Park, when he left, he went and opened a pub. And his one pain point was pies. And he had a combi steamer, he put a pie in there, 15, 20 minutes to cook a pie. And everything else had to wait for that one item. So he couldn't get tables completed and out in a pub. And obviously a pie in a pub is like a popular item. So I told him about, you know, Merry Chef. And so we got him to come, Merry Chef, and he's doing a pie in 5 minutes. And it just completely changed it. Mm. He said that's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where he just nicknames it Merry, you know, to say put it in the Merry. And now he expanded his food offer to a lunch offer. So when the chefs are all gone, bar staff are doing sandwiches.
Right, okay.
You know, so from a revenue perspective, now, all right, he's an independent. Mm-hmm. You know, he's getting more throughput through the kitchen when he's busy. But also when there's downtime, there's no one there to cook, he can still offer some food element and still generate revenue. You know, that's an independent scenario, but within, say, the main pub sectors, that piece of kit is more of an accelerated vehicle box.
To back up.
It's backup. And it's been historically like that for a long time. So we've been supporting pub markets for, you know, easy 20 years on older models. And they see that key bit just to get out of trouble.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, it's Christmas. Mark, you know, are the Christmas menus getting more... Are they evolving more? Are you seeing particular trends in the market this year? Or is it just the same old, you know, turkey and mince pies?
I think it's a bit of everything.
Okay.
Christmas is steeped in tradition, and then the culinary plays into that as well. Lots of classic dishes that we all know, love. However, innovation is needed in the industry, and there's lots of people out there who are willing to sort of to push that. And yeah, this year is no different. So what are we seeing this year? Not necessarily just around the festive season, but we're seeing things like lots of combinations. I don't like the word fusion because it does confuse, but things right. like the word swicy. I'm not sure if you've heard that.
No, I've never heard that.
Swavery.
Right, okay.
So there we go. So this is all about bringing sort of flavour profiles together that normally perhaps you wouldn't expect to see.
Right.
Marrying them up, they work brilliant. And that just causes, you know, a sort of
movement. What kind of things you're talking about though?
Okay, perhaps like a really peppery southern fried chicken fillet with a hot honey sriracha sauce smothered.
Okay. Nice.
A savoury with a, you know, that kind of vibe. We're also seeing lots of crossovers. So things like pizzadillas. So that's a hybrid of a pizza and a quesadilla. Okay, so yeah, absolutely, it's happening. We've got things like machos. So that's mac and cheese nachos putting together there. Sushritos, which is sushi burrito. So that's sort of the sort of trendy, and we're bringing in back in the street food kind of thing there. But so it's all about the sensory eating as well. I think people are sort of more aware of their sensories, and, you know, they're hot and spicy and all those things that sort of, you know, get the mouth going and things like that. So we will always see our sort of pigs in blankets, but now we're seeing them with maple and chili and things like that. So
So a slight deviation on the
And it's a great time, because I think the gloves come off at Christmas. People are happy to indulge, they're happy to splurge a little bit, and they're happy to try new things. So
we'll put a few more kilos on.
Indeed we do. Indeed we do.
And Paul, from your perspective, have you seen anything in, I know you're more in the product development, but are you that close to the, you're seeing food?
Yeah, so we do work with, the chefs a lot to understand some of the core trends, mm-hmm. So we do look at things, and it's not necessarily down to the detail, like, the actual flavour trends, but we do look at what are people looking to do more of, where we're seeing increases of certain food types. Now, there's a famous salesman, we'll name him Joshua Bruce, saying that the Merry Chef is primarily does a lot of sandwiches, that keeps the lights on in the business. It's known as a toaster. Mm-hmm. But we're always looking to say, well, what other key food groups do we need to adapt the oven to do well? And there's a big trend in, like, air frying. Okay, so the ovens, yes, can do fries, but how do we elevate that to do it better?
Right.
So we look at these kind of core food groups to say, right, can we take a method to then improve that? Whether it could be an accessory, is it a new oven?
Uh-huh.
But new oven's a long road thing. It doesn't happen overnight. But things like accessories are very quick. We can bring them to market very quickly. So we do keep an eye on those kind of key things. Because if you think about top kind of food items that you'd have, burgers, pizza, fries. Right. These are kind of four, kind of common good hot dogs.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. It's like, all right, if you took all those, can we redo them really well? And if we can't, what can we do to get them really well, but still allow the oven to be as flexible as possible? But we don't want to say, oh, by the way, that's just for pizza.
Yeah.
We want to give, the beauty of Merrychef is it gives it its flexibility along with the different accessories to give, the customers this wide-ranging menu they want to offer, not just pigeonhole them down one avenue. So, if you're saying that, we do touch on it, and we are developing a lot of different concepts and ideas.
Okay. And for sort of operators listening, I mean, obviously, Merrychef is a massive brand. I mean, everyone, I think, knows the brand. But to give some people some sort of something tangible, if you like, have you got a few, high margin, festive menu ideas? I know you've touched on a few there already, Mark, but that you put through the Connex range and that would encourage operators to consider?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've already touched upon it, but things like, stuffing top turkey melt paninis, luxurious, big eats, a little bit messy, but, you're going to feel great afterwards in terms of, your well-being. Festive loaded fries, cranberry brie, pulled turkey, that sort of thing, and just getting a little bit creative, using the seasonal ingredients, but just getting a little bit sort of more modern and putting twists on them. Warm Christmas desserts, mince pie blondies, things like that. Some great chef must have come up with that.
I think there's one key thing there. So everyone goes for the savoury stuff, and even though we've seen this transfusion, I think one of the things that I don't see a lot of operators do at wintertime, hot desserts. I'll just have a piece of cake. No, like, we'll get something a bit hotter, do, even its basic level, crumble.
Yeah.
Or, indulgent chocolate, because the oven warms up stuff. It's winter. Right, it's been quite a mild winter so far, fingers crossed. Yeah, you utilise the oven to expand onto something sweet.
But I was actually, at the weekend, I went to Windsor Great Park, and they've got the illuminations, the lights, Christmas lights. And they had there, one of the street food vendors was a crumble vendor.
Yeah.
Custard and that's all they were doing.
And it could be basic, it could be something from just a waffle. So I think any operators that are doing the savoury stuff, as Mark said, elevate it, keep it simple, utilise what you've currently got, just re-spin it a little bit.
Yeah.
Let the oven then deliver that quickly, so you're not having to reinvent the wheel from a food bit. Mm. And add a couple of warm desserts, because, again, they're high-margin products, everyone sells coffee, right? High margin product. So desserts are in that sort of same category.
Yeah.
But okay. We're not limited, Bradford, to those kind of snacky items and sandwiches and things. So most recently, I did a little demonstration to a group of chefs from a really sort of premium hotel group here in the UK. And they turned up to our demo kitchen in Guildford. So I did them a two-course lunch. There were six of them. And we were using our Connex 16. So that's our 16-inch cavity there, the biggest one we've got, the most powerful Connex in the range. So for their main course, I did two courses. For the main course, I did a crispy confit of duck leg, mm-hmm. a pressed dauphinoise potato, and some braised red cabbage, okay? All through one oven in one hit.
Well, okay. How many people?
There was only six of them.
Yeah, but
it really then just shows you, you know, those small banqueting type events, private dinners, satellite kitchens. Too. That's where they really would sort of add value into those big hotels who were multifaceted. So I did that for them. So I plated that up in 3 minutes. And then I did them a sort of a caramelized apple and cinnamon bread and butter pudding
to
follow.
And what was the feedback on that? Were they quite...
Blown away.
Yeah, but they were.
Purely because of the quality of the finish of the products coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way we'd set up the program to sort of really, you know, talking about getting a quick core temperature in there, getting some nice colour and some caramelization and crisping up. So you're really breathing life back into those products. So,
yeah. Good ideas. Because I think that's sometimes a bit of a risk, isn't it, with some of the high-speed ovens. They can maybe get boxed in
with
certain products. But in actual fact, there's so much more that can be...
There really is, yeah.
That gives you a good... That's a good segue into that conversation, isn't it? Like when you're going into the more traditional catering side of things, like chefs within hotels, they're very traditional beasts. You know, they like their water baths and combi steamers. They know how that works. So I think some of the challenges that we're aware of is that, you know, although the oven is easy to use, we're seeing it in like our eyes, it's easy to use.
Yeah.
But when you're giving it to someone who's never seen it before, some of the things that, from a product manager's perspective, is how do we make it even easier for people to operate that and understanding?
Of course.
You know, that's a big challenge. So you take it out of the box, you plug it in, you're ready to go. There is a menu on there, but then it's like, well, it hasn't got the thing I wanted. How do I get that information? How do I program it myself? And these, again, things are, you know, part of Connex as well, is that platform gives us a lot more flexibility to use the software.
Right,
okay. To enhance more digital features going forward. So there, again, that's another thing we're looking at.
So is there like a load of standard programs delivered with the unit?
There is. So every oven comes with a cookbook. Now, we can't put everything on there, but mm-hmm. we can put a generic thing on there. But it's then how do people interface with that? So it may not sound like everything's product management. It's like just, you know, a big metal box, and how do we do that? No, there's software now. Software has become a big integral part in the ecosystem of what Merry Chef is. So how do we get people to be really interactive? We've still got, you know, people like Mark and all the other chefs to support, but we want people to make it as easy as possible. When they get there, they know how that journey goes. How do they do it themselves? So that is a challenge at the moment that, you know, we understand that people may find it challenging to get their head round how to use it,
mm-hmm.
but the things we're working on to deliver that from a software solution as well.
Okay. We're going to take a break in a moment, but I'm just going to ask you both a slightly more personal question, if it's all right, obviously, because we're heading towards Christmas. Are you finishing soon, or what have you... This will actually be out just before Christmas, so just for Christmas.
But I'm right up to the 23rd of the month.
So. Okay, so you're right up.
Yeah.
And what does Christmas look like for you at home, if you don't mind me asking?
Very much a quiet family affair.
Okay.
I'm not big on big parties and things like that.
Are you cooking?
I'm always cooking.
Right, okay.
It's much easier that way. And I enjoy it, I must say, yeah. I don't cook all the time, but...
Can we pry into what the menu might look like?
It will be something of a beef Wellington effort, oh, nice. I think.
Okay, so slightly diverging from...
Yeah, I'm not a great turkey fan, but only because I can't cook it that well in my little oven at home. I need a big chef oven to do it. But
Paul, for you, you're working right up until the...
I'm working right up to the hilt.
Are you?
Yes, yeah, I think my tradition... I have a weird tradition in my family. So my mum always... Every other year, I think, my mum would always used to say, right, you know what, I can't be bothered doing Christmas dinner. So what she did, she went down to the Chinese, got huge amounts of Chinese.
Love it.
Scoffed that down on Christmas Eve, and then any leftovers is what you have on Christmas Day. So she...
Oh, seriously? No,
yeah, seriously. So I tend to do that kind of tradition. This year is that tradition spinning round. and then next year will be normal turkey.
Okay.
Festivities, but I think it's going to be a very quiet one. Because right, food's in there, go and help yourself and sit down and actually just relax and clean up all the wrapping paper.
Well, it sounds good to me. I mean, mine is just basically going to M&S and buying as much as you can. And yeah, it just never kind of stops. So we'll just take a short break and then we're going to come back and get into a bit more detail and a couple of quick fire rounds.
Welcome to the world of Ali, the largest and most diverse food service equipment company on the planet. With over 110 brands under the Ali Group umbrella, we serve more than 150 countries worldwide. Our brands are at the forefront of innovation, offering cutting-edge technology and ergonomic designs that keep pace with the ever-evolving market. But we're not just a global leader, we're a network of local companies working together to deliver excellence. Ali Group's unmatched expertise in food service makes us the proud exclusive sponsor of Kitchen Curiosity. To learn more, visit aligroup.com.
Hello, welcome back. So, Paul and Mark now rejoined. We had a nice little break and a cup of coffee. So, we're feeling refreshed. Welcome back, gents. We're going to, on this section, going to get into a little bit more about retail. I know you're kind of big in retail, if you like. Also talk about maybe like a case study, something that you've done with a particular operator or something. A few quick fire fun rounds. And Paul, I'm going to put you under a bit of pressure in a moment, but we'll come back to that. So yeah, let's talk about retail. I mean, when we talk about retail, you're talking more about kind of, I guess, coffee shops and...
Yeah, high streets, you know, chain operators within that field. So I think Christmas is again a very challenging time for them. As we said, you know, previously, it's that window of opportunity to maximise revenue streams. Mm-hmm. But the challenges they will see is, you know, like small inefficiencies will deliver sort of bigger problems in that kind of big operation environment. You know, because they're going to get a lot of throughput. You know, and it's everything from coffee machines to ovens to, you know, fridges, all those bits in those kind of environments. Any small inefficiencies have a big impact. So where we look at those, you know, they're the kind of challenges that we see on a day-to-day kind of thing is making sure that those inefficiencies are limited as best as possible. Key thing is downtime. You know, it makes, you know, it sounds very obvious, but reliability. You know, a lot of time goes into engineering to, make the products and components within the oven reliable. Mm-hmm. You know, and for those who visited the factory, you know, there is an entire room dedicated to life testing.
Right, okay.
So every single componentry part that is bought that goes in an oven goes on a live test.
Right.
24 hours, 7 days a week, and over Christmas a day, constantly running.
Cool.
Because we want to make sure that we're buying a certain componentry part, and they say it lasts however long, we want to test that. So, and we're obviously blessed within the UK, we have our own service engineers.
Yeah.
So key thing, whether you're an independent or, you know, a chain operator, reliability is very important.
Yeah.
You know, any downtime within this Christmas period has massive impact, because that even just a couple of hours, you're losing that sales revenue. You compound that over 10 stores, 100, thousands. You know, that's massive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that affects trading very, very, very seriously. So we ensure that the product, you know, does what it says on the tin. And if it does go wrong, making sure that there is a solution to fix it very, very quickly. So connectivity plays a big part in that.
Mm-hmm.
Going to that digital space now to remotely see if ovens are not feeling well. You know, you can say, okay, this is going to cause a problem in very soon. Let's get someone out there to fix it before it does go down in that peak trading period. And even if they're not connected, you know, we've got a fantastic aftercare team that can get there very, very quickly.
Are people connecting more and more, are you finding? Or
It's on the rise. I think the people are still... It depends on who you speak to.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll definitely see, like, retail operators with numerous stores see the value in it, because they can get a lot more information from the oven in terms of cook counts, menu deployment, And again, talking about seasonal menu, this is a fantastic time where if you had a connected device, you say, right, we're going to put a menu up there with the festive menu. And then 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, you can remove that off and it goes into a more healthier option.
Well, that just downloads automatic and then
downloads automatically.
Wow.
You know, so there's no interaction to go into store to do that. You can deploy the menus very easily, but also then you're getting information back. You know, if your oven's had a bit of a hard time over Christmas, not feeling well in January, okay, you can get someone to have a look at it. So you're keeping that downtime, and the return of investment piece is a big thing as well.
Yeah.
You know, how we're looking at models to say to customers, well, yes, you buy an oven at this thing, this is how much it's going to cost you through the life cycle of an oven. And if you have connectivity, service, you know, what does that whole package look like to deliver? And that's very much more, as you said, for chain operators. Independents, not too much. You know, they want to get their oven and use it. But as we mentioned previously, you know, we're looking at ways of how do we make that entry into independence more easier and more affordable. You know,
what
again,
sort of things are you able to say, or you're not? Is that
you could look at things like cars.
Yeah.
Let's take cars as an example. With connectivity, you know, we know what the oven's doing.
Yeah.
So you could do where you pay per mile.
Yeah.
You know,
pay per cook
kind of scenario, and you only get charged for what you've used the oven for.
Yeah.
Instead of paying that a big capital expense. You know, these are kind of things we are looking at. And it's difficult at the moment because you have to, you know, there's a lot of regulatory stuff around the financing and stuff like that.
Yes,
but it's something that we've always had on the table. It's just where and when we decide to deploy it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mark, I mean, from your perspective, is there kind of any interesting case studies or things that you've done in that, it's been the company, 7 months? So
yes.
Yeah. Any pieces of work or anything you can share without giving the competition away?
No, absolutely. No, I've got an interesting one, actually. We touched about the pub trade, and one of the points we didn't really capture was there's still quite a lot of wet-led pubs in the country.
Yeah.
And most recently, myself and two colleagues, we were lucky enough to be invited to a trade event for quite a famous brewery down on the Kent coast, Shepherd Neem. And what we did, we were lucky enough to turn up. We had our Connex 12 standard power. So that's just a 13 amp plug. You put it on a solid surface and away you go. So we set up in a space a lot smaller than this room, probably 2 meters by 2 meters. And over the course of 3 hours, they had invited 250 of their publicans, landlords, you know, the pub owners to come along and just experience all the suppliers sort of putting out their festive stuff and tasting the trends of the season. So what we did, we had 5 little hot hole bite size, not necessarily canapes, but just tasty treats and snacks.
Okay.
And it ended up we had 1,250 pieces to get through over a couple of hours. And with the Merry Chef 12, the standard power, it was just seamless. It was just myself, my two colleagues who were doing the sales part. And literally, we took a lot of the products that the pub have, so ciders and beers and stouts, and then transforming them into some really cool and interesting flavour profiles.
What kind of things are you doing?
So think stout chili and chocolate glazed chicken wings. Think black pudding bonbons with cider and apple dip.
Wow.
Think about pulled ham and cheese, rarebit toasted sandwiches, and things like that.
So really, ideas of like maybe sharing plates, small plates that people might have while they're in a pub.
So wet-let pubs can become very busy very quickly. And if you haven't got a food offer, if you've just got some nuts and some onions on the bar, you know, you're kind of limited to what you're going to capture.
Yes.
And if you haven't got a full kitchen in your real estate, well, perhaps you don't need the extraction. You could find a space to put a Merry Chef, a simple work area with a refrigerated unit, and you've got a food offer ready to go. Right. And it just shows you, you know, the capabilities of what you can then do. And then your revenues, you know, you're in the food game all of a sudden.
Yeah, so, and it's increasing the revenue, which is...
And that really opened it up for people who weren't aware of what a Merry Chef was necessarily or haven't heard of one. So, yeah, we got a lot of interest from those guys with the wet lead looking to really increase their potential.
And are you seeing some people now adopting that, or was that the strategy that they're going to start putting that out now? And
yeah, it wasn't necessarily a strategy; it just all sort of came together. But yeah, okay. we've got lots of interest in terms of some solid sales orders and things coming through.
Yeah, some really good advice. There's a lot of sort of village pubs, things like that that are struggling.
Yeah,
finding it difficult.
Yeah,
because maybe they're just wet lead, or like you say, it's just crisps or whatever.
That's right.
But it's an opportunity to add something in, isn't it? And also give the customers something.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't need a full kitchen team. You don't need, a highly qualified chef. You know, with the right planning, you can purchase products that are suitable for the Merry Chef Oven. We can get the programs right and you're done. It's literally a button, open a door, present it, and you're done.
What would you recommend? Like sort of six, how many sort of dishes would you recommend that they put on that kind of?
I would keep it fairly simple. Just get some really, good strong dishes. You know your customer profile, so you know what they're going to like.
Yeah.
Something perhaps that's relative to your pub or to your area, local produce, things like that. But yeah, you might want something more economic. You know, your clientele might need something more within a budget, so you can tailor it to that. There's lots of scope with these machines.
Pigs in blankets at Christmas again.
Who doesn't?
So yeah. Well, that's a good piece of advice as well, and interesting as well, because it's only actually something I've been working on locally in my area, is about local pubs.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take that little hint off you.
Good. It'll breathe life back into the industry, which we need. The pub industry is really, I'm not sure.
It's struggling.
It's quite sad to see.
It's struggling, yeah. And those places are like hubs of community sometimes.
Totally.
You know, they're like an extended village hall, really.
Yeah.
In some places.
Absolutely.
So, okay, fantastic. So, Paul, obviously we just talked there about kind of retail, and we were talking about there really about kind of coffee shops and premium cafes in supermarkets and things like that. But also you're doing stuff in the takeaway market, if we talk about like the sort of Deliveroo, Uber Eats, that kind of sector, which is obviously booming at the moment.
Yeah, so again, if you look at that area, so whether you're going into a front-facing retail place, well, most people now are looking with, the dark kitchen was a thing in the past, but you're this massive takeaway option, which Deliveroo and Uber Eats have delivered. So again, solutions around that is looking at capacity. So retailers are going to be serving in store as well, but also you're going to have this queue of delivery drivers wanting to get food. And again, giving capacity. So, the key thing around ovens is that small and compact. Mm-hmm. So you could fit multiple ovens in one location to give you that extra capacity to deliver both in store and delivery. But also again, things like Connect 16, gives you that bigger cavity in not much more space than required. So again, that's going to give you a lot of output to then help alleviate that other revenue stream of delivery as well. So I think that's a key solution around that as well. But it's all about, it's capacity. So again, speed, ease of use, and we've touched on a few things about getting that ecosystem and operational bit aligned to ovens, so they can be a lot more effective in delivering multiple customers at once.
Perfect, yeah. So very, very versatile piece of equipment, really, in that sense. And like another market that we just sometimes don't think about or we forget about.
Yeah, and you've also seen that, the rise in like hot holding as well. So a lot of, they call it hot fridges, hot cabinets, etc. Yes. So again, ovens cook to order to deliver there and then, food. But also, the ovens are more than flexible to support those kind of hot holding scenarios. Because if you think typically, if you go in a normal convection oven or in a combi, you probably take 10, 15 minutes to reheat products, lost sales window in that time. Mm. Can a Connect 16 deliver that in a really short amount of time? Absolutely. So you're not losing out on revenue, but also when you get to that drop-off, when things go quiet, you can then just move cook to order. So again, you don't have any wastage. So I think there's different, it's all about flexibility. The oven is flexible depending on the user's operational needs.
Perfect. So, Paul, I'm going to put you under a bit of pressure. Sorry. I haven't prepped you for this. So what we're going to do is play a little bit of a game, if you like. I'm going to ask you to give us one truth or one lie about something in your business or customer, or it can be a Christmas event, it could be a cooking thing. And then me and Mark are going to try and work out which one is real and which one is the lie. Who knows, there might even be a prize or something at the end. So, yeah.
Right. it's a hard one. I have to think about this. Okay, so We've got a Moscow mishap.
Okay.
So that's taking us into dodgy territory there. So Moscow mishap.
Yeah.
And the other one comes to mind is petrol power outage.
Right. Give us both, and then we'll yeah.
So I met a colleague, and this is when I used to live down south before I moved back up north. So I met a colleague who was coming from France, met Heathrow Terminal 5. He was getting an early flight, so I checked in early. So they gave us some boarding cards, etc. Didn't have a gate number on them. So we said, oh, we'll go to the lounge, chill out in the lounge, back in the days when I was travelling a lot. So we sat there for a couple of hours talking about work. And I said to him, right, can you go and look at the departures board, please? And before he went to the departure board, we were talking about some business that was going on in Dubai. So he went there, came back. He says, right, it's gate B5. I said, that's not far. We'll just get the underground, go underneath the thingy, get to the other side. Got to the other side, tapped in our boarding passes. Tapped it again. And then the lady turned around and said, sir, this is the plane to Dubai. So I turned around and looked at him, went sacré bleu, with being polite. And they said that your flight is from A5, which is literally underneath where we were in the lounge. So I then just legged it and got in the elevator. And the lady said, you won't be able to make it. And I shouted back to say, watch me. So we managed to get underneath the service tunnel. Don't know how.
Right.
So there's a security issue at Terminal 5 there to come all the way back just to miss our plane to Moscow.
But you missed it?
Missed it.
Oh.
And had to get a later one.
Ooh. Well, at least you didn't end up in Dubai. I mean, well, it wouldn't have been too bad.
snow in Moscow, Dubai. And then the other one was a colleague of ours, basically before the Icon E3 came out. It was an oven before that. So he was a very, 1990s styly Merry Chef oven. We were heavily going into the convenience petrol forecourt market. So he... back in then, we all had like cars you had to put ovens in. You can't do that now because of health and safety. But anyway, there's an oven that went in the back of the car. He delivered to this guy. Put it into the store to do sandwiches, plugged it all in. It ran for a good 5 minutes. Then all of a sudden, there was a big bang. Petrol pumps went out, power went out, and subsequently, pretty much most of the neighbourhood went out.
No
of
way.
Electricity. And the guy turned around to the sales guy going, I wish I never met you.
Were they blaming the oven?
They were blaming the oven for it.
What, for a complete power outage? Okay. Mark, what do you reckon?
Paul, you told both of those stories with such conviction. I'm not sure at all. But I'm going to say the second one is a fib.
We've all done that with a gate, haven't we? I mean, where we've been running, I don't know how many airports I've run through where trying to make a connection or something. But yeah, I find it hard to believe that Mary Schiff would knock out the power for the whole of a school district. Yeah, but maybe it's possible.
The old E3, maybe, yeah. But yeah, I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to say your second story is not a truth.
Go on then, Paul, tell us what.
The second story is the truth.
Oh, no way. So seriously, there was just electrical fault with the distribution board or something?
I think it definitely took out the power of the petrol station. There was no pumps working, but then subsequently there was a big spike that it hit a transformer at the same time and power went out.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Great.
But then that's where we think, right, electrics need to be changed on ovens and thing. You have to... He didn't have the right breaker board or whatever, but it was that was
many years ago, I guess.
That was very early 90s.
Right, okay.
Good.
All right, well, thank you for that. Thanks. Sorry to put in a bit of pressure, but I think you did pretty well.
Yes.
With no preparation, so yeah, really good. We're going to do a little bit of a quick fire round, if that's okay. So, most underrated Christmas menu that operators should be serving, but they're not?
I said it before, I think desserts, hot desserts, boozy, chocolatey, hot desserts.
Mine was a lot more simpler than that.
All right.
I'm focusing more on ingredients that don't get a good look in. And you know, I was sort of thinking long and hard. And it's the humble chestnut. It can do so much more. And we don't go out and buy them and cook with them. They sit around, they get dusty, and then they go in the bin. You can roast them, you can puree them, you can put them in soups, you can put them in desserts. There's so much more. You can caramelize them in a Merry Chef if you wanted to and serve them as a bar snack.
Ooh, so, chestnuts and hot honey.
Oh,
there you go.
There we go.
See, okay.
We're innovating as we talk. It's the humble chestnut for me.
Yeah. That's taking the sort of chestnut roasting on the street to a different level, isn't it? You can have a Merry Chef on the street, maybe on a sort of mobile generator.
It will happen one day, I'm sure of it.
Just make sure you've got the right breaker.
Yeah. So, the strangest thing you've ever seen, ideally festive, cooked or asked to develop or cook? Any of them?
I'll go for that one then. So, over my years as a chef, I spent some time as a private chef up in the Aberdeenshire Highlands, working for a very high-profile family in their game lodge.
Nice.
Over the New Year festive season, I was preparing New Year's Eve dinner, mm-hmm. as it was every year, and the menu was given to me to perform, selected by the host, a very distinguished gentleman, very old, very traditional. And it was for a haggis Wellington with a whiskey cream sauce. Now,
wow.
I was only about 25 at the time, so I've never handled a haggis.
Yeah.
Wellington, I think I may have attempted or heard of or seen it done. So the pressure was on. And honestly, you know, so I had to put all sorts of other things in. So neeps, tatties, and you know, make it look fantastic, like a centerpiece. It turned out like a giant Cornish pasty. It was an absolute mess. So once you warm haggis up, everything kind of relaxes.
Yeah.
We just ended up with this big...
Oh, seriously?
Old, yeah. But, you know, he loved it. It was all about the flavour, and that's what they wanted. And that was...
Because I guess there's quite a lot of moisture in the haggis.
Yeah, absolutely. The... And you know, I was, again, very young, very naive, didn't really understand how to do this thing. But, it, you know, they were all right with it. But that's...
Did you have to sort of maybe wrap the haggis and something first before putting it into the pastry or...?
I can't actually remember what I did, but as you know, haggis is encased in a kind of, well, bladder, for want of a better word. But these days, it's a synthetic form. But I had to take all that off, form it, mould it, put... season it. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And then trying to roll it and shape it into pastry. Yeah. Not something I've tried since, that's for sure.
Paul, have you got any not all your side of things? Or
I haven't got anything strange, but a funny story, I think, when I was at Penny Hill Park, is that we did have guinea fowl on the build-up to Christmas on some of the banquet menus.
Okay.
So there was one dish with guinea fowl, and we were serving, like, you know, there must be about 200 people. Okay. And then one of the waiters obviously had a bit of a translation kind of issue. So he was from Poland. Very nice guy. Nothing wrong with him. But when I say it was guinea fowl, he refused to pick the plates up to take them. He says, I can't serve this food. I was like, why? He goes, I can't serve it because it's a pet. I said, no, it's a game bird. He's like, so why can't you take it? No, because it's a pet. I said, well, what kind of pet do you have? He's like, the small thing. I said, no, that's a hamster. So he got hamster and guinea fowl completely mixed up and refused to take it. So
if the Connex had a, it could be a Christmas superpower or a superpower, what superpower would it be?
I'm going to be very corporate on this. It's the superpower is probably consistency and making you money.
Cool.
I'm going to be very chefy
and
say its superpower is it won't go out and get drunk and call in sick and leave you in the shit.
Fair enough. And there'll be a lot of that going on in this month. One Christmas flavour or trend that you'd happily ban forever?
I've got two, and it's eggnog and mulled wine.
Oh.
And the reason is, maybe as a younger chef, I tried to get drunk on both of those things, and it didn't work. But it was a dreadful experience, I can tell you. So, yeah.
I'm going to say none. It's all good. Just for 4 weeks.
Very positive.
I agree with you on eggnog. I mean, what's that about?
It's a bit
strange, isn't it? So if you both opened up a festive food truck for December, or, you know, over the Christmas period, maybe at Winter Wonderland, what would you call it? It can be together or individually. It's up to you. What would you serve as well?
Ooh. That's a toughie.
Well, as my name suggests, so Patel's, you know, heritage from India. So I think I might have to put some spice in that somewhere. I'll probably call it Feliz Navidad.
Nice. I like that.
Clever. Isn't it? Oh, food truck. Dear, I think I'm going to have to go with something like Marky Mark's Magical Merry Chef Mistletoe Munchies.
Oh, I love it.
And I will be just knocking out the tastiest treats and snacks, incorporating swavery and swicy and all
that. You're going to need
things.
A long van for
a
that.
A very long van. A stretched food truck for us.
I love that. That's great.
Good stuff.
And a tick towards Merry Chef as well. So mince pies, overrated or elite?
I'm going to go elite.
Yeah, especially M&S mince pies. I mean, as you tell, I'm an M&S fan, so...
I do like a mince pie, but it has to be of a certain standard.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a snob in that sense, but with a little bit of clotted cream. All day long. Thank you.
Yeah.
Agreed. Don't go cheap and cheerful. Go and buy the ones you can afford.
That's it.
Definitely.
That's it. And pop them through the Merry Chef for, what, 20 seconds?
Oh, yeah.
So we are just sort of coming to the end, nearly the end of the podcast. Just looking ahead now, so this is the end of last episode for this year. Thinking about next year, 2026, for food service equipment industry, what do you think is coming up? And I know I haven't asked this question, you know, I'm just going to throw this at you, but how do you think next year is going to look out? I mean, I've heard, you know, that this year it's been up and down, it's been strange, we've had really busy periods and then less so for the distributors. I know with you guys, because obviously it's such a strong brand that you probably don't experience those troughs so badly, but I don't know, what do you think next year is going to look like?
I think we're going to see a continuation of technology coming into the business to make the business more streamlined and efficient, but to tackle these labour issues that we keep harping on about. So I think we're going to see a lot more innovation in terms of cooking technology, really, to support chefs out there.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And I think Paul and his team will be at the forefront of that. So.
And that staff shortage, that skill shortage, that's a real pain, because I'm seeing that as well with people. Yeah. It's a real challenge.
Yes.
More than ever before, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a real thing. And I'm not sure where that comes from. There's lots of reasons why we might be in this position, but it hasn't happened overnight. The industry has been in a sort of decline when it comes to that skill set. Attracting people into the industry has always been tough. It is a tough environment sometimes. So I think, you know, having products such as the Connex range, you know, it really does help businesses.
Take the pressure off.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Paul, for you, what in the wider context of our industry, how do you think next year is going to plan out? And
I think it's there's going to be ongoing challenges. You know, I think, you know, even this year, it's been a bit of a weird year. I'd like to think the World Cup next year might boost to some trade, but it's an early doors thing. But I think the core fundamental problems that we see on a day-to-day basis across all sectors are still the main things that we need to tackle and look at delivering those solutions. And I think we're in a very good place to now, you know, deploy some of those. I said labour, big issue, in just not necessarily in terms of the physical people, but the interaction with ovens. You know, how do we get that barrier down to make it, whether it's, I like to call it Mrs. Miggins Cafe Independence, just able to access that product, use it effectively, and get it to do what they want it to do to make revenue for their business, you know, and keep that whole cost ROI down as best as possible. With the chain operators, again, it's how do we start then deploying hero features within the software area to deliver those kind of small marginal gains. So the software will be a key bit that we'll look at in terms of how to make it easier for them to get more operational efficiencies, you know, versus having to press a button. Will we go fully automated? Don't know. But then other things around accessories, you know, just to look at different accessories that are going to help those efficiencies. So again, you know, beginning of This year, we launched the cavity liner.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds simple, you know, but when you looked at the kind of research on it, the labour saving...
Massive.
Is a winner in terms of... Yes, because we're not a combi steamer. We don't connect to water. Our flexibility is the fact you can plonk it on a counter, put the plug in, don't need anything else, done. Cleaning is a labour-intensive period. We've made it as easy as possible to clean, but we're trying to make it even easier. So the launch of the cavity liner is just going to help that. So if you imagine a store, and it's not about cutting the cost down, it's about saying overall, if that oven took, say, 15, 20 minutes to clean, and we made it into 3 minutes, that time that you've gained could be on something else that you could done. It could be, you know, the cleaning duties, or it could be the fact that you shut stores early or whatever, and you can save on labour that way. But it's redirecting the resource somewhere else to do, and then bring that whole piece of clothes down smaller.
Yeah.
So that's kind of things like that we look at. So there's a whole raft of stuff. I think, as we mentioned in the podcast, some of the challenges out there, and I think we're very primed and ready to meet those challenges and deliver solutions.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you both. I hope you both enjoyed it, and obviously have a great Christmas and a happy New Year.
Thank you.
And you too. Thank you very much.
Cool. Well, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. As we've been hearing there, we've talked a lot about Christmas and the busy times and how Merry Chef and Wellbuilt are supporting their customers and getting through those busy times in December. This is actually the last episode for this year, for 2025, and next year we start in January. I'm actually sitting down with the head chef of Chequers, the Prime Minister's private residence, as our first episode, and me and him took a flight out to Lyon and we had a look around sort of the culinary world of Lyon there and a manufacturer that's making cooking sweets. So thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you have a good Christmas and New Year. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is exclusively sponsored by Ali Group and is a Sound Rebel production.